40 years ago today, I was with my mom's family in New York, and after dinner, we slipped into the living room to watch Richard Nixon announce that he'd be resigning the presidency. He didn't have many fans in the room, but there was no gloating. We were all just totally dumbstruck. And not just us. It was one of those moments when the whole world stopped and paid attention. Think about it. The leader of the free world brought to his knees by a domestic scandal. A scandal, as we know so well now, fueled by Nixon's own White House tape recordings. Here's a snippet from one of those damning tapes where Nixon and an aide discuss breaking into the safe at the Brookings Institution in Washington to get some papers the president really wanted.
I want it implemented on a thievery basis. Goddamn, get in and get those files.
In case you need the subtitles, the president is saying, I want it implemented on a thievery basis. Goddammit, get in and get those files. Vintage Nixon, you could say. Tom Blanton directs a nonprofit National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. He says Nixon's recordings were made using the latest technology at the time.
The voice-activated part was pretty extraordinary because both Kennedy and Johnson had had taping systems, but it required them to press a button. And so some conversations didn't get recorded. We only have selections, say, of the Kennedy discussions on the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nixon's tapes were actually more honest as voice-activated. They even picked up the vacuum cleaner when the White House janitors would come in at the end of the day. So one of the problems, of course, with these 3,000 hours of tapes is there's a lot of unintelligible, a lot of gibberish, a lot of talking over, and it's a hugely hard often to figure out what are they saying.
This was not the first time, though, that the White House had a system of some sort to record conversation in the Oval Office.
That's right. I think it goes even back to Franklin Roosevelt had a recorder for his fireside chats. I think Truman had a small recording system. Eisenhower, there are even some dictabelts left from the Eisenhower years. I think Kennedy was the first one to have a kind of a systematic system, but even then you had to punch the button to get it going. Nixon's was the first that really taped the Oval Office, the cabinet room, his hideaway office, his phone calls. So it's an extraordinary record.
Strangely, though, Nixon knew about the eavesdropping context of what he was doing. He was a kind of chess player guy who thought far ahead. Why wasn't he worried about committing to tape, potentially incriminating conversations about blackmail, about break-ins? Was he not concerned about that?
Nixon never thought that any court would override the president's power. I mean, there's this amazing moment on one of the tapes where his chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, is commenting about the Pentagon Papers leak. And Haldeman says, you know, the problem with these Pentagon Papers coming out is that you can't pretend the president is infallible anymore. Presidents make mistakes. They order bad policies. This is terrible. Out of all the gobbledygook, the problem here is that it's going to be restraining on presidential power.
Well, let's have a listen to a bit of that conversation.
The implicit infallibility of presidents, which has been an accepted thing in America, is badly hurt by this.
President Nixon and aide H.R. Haldeman there in 1971. And that executive privilege argument was kind of the final straw when the tapes went to the Supreme Court in the summer of 74.
Summer of 74, because the tapes showed what the president knew and when he knew it in the Watergate, Senate Watergate Committee's immortal words. So because in those tapes, it shows the president ordering the CIA to lie to the FBI, shows him interfering with the assistant attorney general's investigation and prosecution of the burglars, shows him Nixon constructing the cover-up with his top aides. It shows him, Richard Nixon, with his other top aides like Henry Kissinger, ordering illegal wiretaps on staff members afraid of leaks. So the range of criminal activity captured there is extraordinary.
You know, Tom, it strikes me that this is also a story about technology. And listeners, you've got to excuse me while I go radio techno geek for a moment. During Nixon's day, they had the Sony TC-800B. It was a relatively new compact reel-to-reel tape recorder, and there were all these relatively new TV anchor microphones known as lavaliers, clip-on mics. So that was the foundation of this taping system. But it's also like the HAL 9000 computer in 2001. Was the White House just unable to control the technology, do you think?
I think the control issue really comes to the courts because the microphones were so unobtrusive with these lavalier kind of technology and this reel-to-reel down in a locker down in the basement of the White House. Even at times, it seems that Nixon forgot he was being taped. But, you know, there's extraordinary moments. For example, in late April of 1971, Nixon's just gotten a signal from the Chinese that they would welcome a secret emissary to help set up a future presidential trip. And this is a breakthrough in their opening to China. We now know, of course, that from the Chinese point of view, they were busy playing the far barbarians, the Americans, against the near barbarians, the Soviets. They were playing the American card. So here you have this moment captured on the Nixon tapes. The Chinese are inviting a secret emissary. Nixon calls Kissinger. It's about 8 o'clock at night.
Hello. Dr. Kissinger returning your call, sir.
Hello, Henry. Mr. President.
And Nixon just tortures Kissinger by coming up with every other possible name to be a secret envoy.
How about Nelson? No. His daughter. Well, he wouldn't be disciplined enough. Yeah.
What about David Bruce? No, he's too busy with Vietnam. Oh, what about Elliot Richardson? Nah, he had five other cabinet jobs. What about George H.W. Bush? Too weak and unsophisticated. I thought so, too. But, you know, we need somebody with a title.
Amazing.
It's fascinating. You're listening to Nixon and Kissinger disparage everybody else. At one point, Nixon says,
if Dewey were alive, he could do it.
Yeah, but Tom Dewey's dead. Oh, well. But what Nixon's really doing is twisting the knife in Kissinger, because they both know that Kissinger's the most likely person to go to be that emissary. He's been intimately involved in the strategy, and Nixon's just torturing him. We got a version of this tape years ago, but it had that piece about George Bush cut out on privacy grounds, and we didn't know who they were talking about until we got Kissinger's transcript, because, you know, at the same time Nixon is taping his phone call to Kissinger, Kissinger's got his secretaries listening in, making his own transcript. It's a mutual wiretap society. Extraordinary moments.
It's Shakespearean, and it's incredible. It's all on tape. When you think about the 40 years that have transpired since Nixon's resignation, what is the through line from those Oval Office tapes to the Reagan email to what's being used today in the White House to even what we know about the NSA from Edward Snowden?
I think the through line is an extraordinary narrative about power. The Nixon assumptions on power was he was in total control, that there was no real restraint. If he claimed national security, that could override everything. Now we have, after the email case, which established that White House records had to be saved and ultimately open to the public, President Obama's the first with a digital archiving system for all of his email and BlackBerry messages. Ultimately, we're going to have an incredibly rich record of presidential and policymaking. And the through-line narrative is that we as a society decided to bring our presidents under some greater control and actually live up to the constitutional idea of checks and balances and not let blanket claims of national security and executive privilege override other people's rights or the right of good government.
Tom Blanton directs the nonprofit National Security Archive in Washington, D.C. Great to speak with you. Thanks, Tom.
Pleasure to be with you, Marco.